In recent years, China has moved to the center of the federal public policy agenda. Increasingly, it has become a significant topic at the state level as well. The economic and commercial relationship between China and the state of Texas is substantial and indeed globally significant. China is among Texas's top export destinations and sources of imports and investment, and Chinese students attend Texas universities in large numbers. Notwithstanding these very strong economic and commercial bonds, as well as robust people-to-people connections between China and Texas, some state-level office holders in Texas have boarded the national bandwagon, framing China, and more specifically the Chinese Communist Party, as a serious threat to be countered. One manifestation of this rising sentiment is a bill now before the Texas legislature that, if passed in its current form, would ban Chinese immigrants to the U.S. and visa holders, along with immigrants to the United States and visa holders from Russia, North Korea, and Iran, from acquiring and owning real property in the state of Texas. If passed, such legislation would likely have far-reaching and perhaps not fully understood consequences for the state's economy, inbound investment, and the lives of many Chinese green card holders who lawfully call Texas home. My name is David Feierstein, and welcome to the Bush China Foundation podcast. Joining me today to explore the topic of China as a public policy issue in Texas is Texas State Representative Gene Wu, who represents part of Houston and is a lawyer by trade. Representative Wu, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me on.
In addition to his role as state representative, Gene Wu currently serves on community advocacy organization boards such as the OCA Greater Houston Advisory Board, the Chinese Community Center Advisory Board, and the Baker Ripley Neighborhood Center's Advisory Committee. He also serves as an attorney representing minors in court in either criminal or CPS cases. Additionally, he is passionate about supporting young people in becoming active in civic roles and is a proud advocate for the AAPI community across Texas and the nation. Gene, it's an honor to have you with us on this podcast, and thank you again for your service to the state of Texas. Before we get into the topic at hand, could you tell us a bit more about yourself and, in particular, how you decided to get into state politics and how you're involved in AAPI issues more broadly?
Thanks so much. Well, I mean, you know, I am actually Chinese born. I came to the United States when I was very little, about 3 or 4 years old. And we kind of lived in Odessa for a while. And then I grew up in Houston. And, you know, my love of public policy and love of working in this environment started in grad school, where I got my master's degree from the LBJ school at UT in public policy. And then I got a law degree from the South Texas College of Law. So working in all those things made me realize that, you know, if you want change in society, then you have to go do it yourself. And, you know, you can't just wish for it. You have to fight for it.
It's an incredible story. And as one LBJ grad to another, I just want to congratulate you on the success that you've had and the great work that you do. As you know, Gene, the proposed Texas land ban bill, or Senate Bill 147, is garnering nationwide attention. Indeed, legislators in other states and even at the federal level seem to regard the bill as a model to be emulated. For those not familiar with the bill, can you provide a sense for what the bill seeks to do and why it is being put forward? Or in other words, what problem does this bill seek to solve?
Absolutely. So it's actually not just 147, but it's also Senate Bill 552 and also Senate Bill 711. And it's just not just Texas. There are many bills across the nation, and this is a trend that is starting to happen where people are using sort of the rise in tensions between U.S. and China, which really started during COVID, as a platform to sort of like do these kind of things and make political points with them. And what the law basically would do, and all these laws do something very similar, and that is label the entire Asian community, the entire Chinese community, as basically as spies and traitors. And basically saying that we're concerned about the interaction between the Chinese government and land purchases, thinking that, you know, the Chinese are buying up land. And in response, the legislation, as it was initially drafted, especially 147, would have banned all green card holders, all visa holders, from purchasing or having real property transferred into their names. The legislation couches it as, well, we're only affecting citizens of other countries, but anyone who has a background in immigration law, or if you're an attorney, you know that every immigrant, no matter where you're from, you are a citizen of your home country until the very moment that you are sworn in as a U.S. citizen. So for people in the immigrant community, that could mean decades before, while someone is waiting to become a citizen, that, you know, if this law was in place, that they would not be able to buy a home or start a business or do many other things. And frankly, for the community, it's offensive in a sense of, without individual suspicion, you're blanketly saying this entire group of people are a danger to this nation and a danger to the state. And that is just simply unacceptable. And I know that the basis of this legislation is national security, it's homeland security. But, you know, my question for everyone always is, like, look, had this law been in place while my family was waiting for citizenship, in the decade it took us to become citizens, what would my parents' first house, what would be my childhood home, which my parents purchased for $60,000, what does that have to do with national security? How does that affect anything? And I've yet to get an answer from that.
You know, Gene, you know, one question that occurs to me is, why has the bill been drafted in such a broad and sweeping way when evidently the purported concern is the, quote, communist, the Chinese Communist Party, unquote? So why drag in citizens who are not necessarily even members of the party? In other words, it seems to me that there's a disconnect between the stated objective of the legislation, as articulated by the proponents of the legislation, and the language of the legislation itself. And how do you explain how sweeping this is in the ways that you've described?
It's that exact thing that is part of the reason why the response from our community has been so angry and so ferocious. Because this concept that because you're from China, because you're from any of these countries, you're automatically a spy for that country. You're automatically an agent for this country. It's offensive. And not just in the sense of you're playing into a stereotype, but many of us, you know, and I tell people all the time, my family didn't just come from China. We fled China. My family went through the Great Leap Forward. My family went through the Cultural Revolution. My parents watched people die. And to say, you know, you're being labeled as an agent for a country that you're fleeing from, is just cruel. And you think about, because these laws also affect people from Iran and from North Korea, anybody who is here from North Korea, because we have no diplomatic relationship with North Korea, anyone who is here is a lawful refugee who fled with their lives from North Korea. To be then turned around and labeled an agent for North Korea because you come from the same country, it's just cruel. And I don't know why it was done so broadly, but this is not the first time something like this has happened. In terms of, like, you know, in recent memory, during World War II, when the United States government fought Japan and Germany, we looked over at one side of the country and said, well, look, obviously, German Americans don't answer for what happens in Germany. And so the United States government only rounded about 10,000 German nationals who were in the country at the time and detained them. But the U.S. government looked at the other side and looked at all these Japanese Americans and say, well, there's something different about Asian people. There's something inherently more suspicious about them. We don't like the way they talk. We don't like the way their culture is. We don't like the foods that they eat. We think there's something inherently un-American about them. And so in response to the United States government rounded up 120,000 Japanese Americans, 60% of whom were American citizens, and many of those were American-born American citizens. And the question is why? And ultimately, the answer is because there is a stereotype, this inherent feeling that Asian Americans are just different, that Asians are just different. They're untrustworthy. We don't know what they're up to, so we have to be more suspicious of them.
Do you have the sense, Gene, that the authors and supporters of this bill or these bills that you've referenced have thought through the second and third order effects of this legislation were it to pass? And by the way, how likely is it that this will become law? And on a related note, do you anticipate that if it were to become law, there would be grounds for potential constitutional challenges?
Well, I think first of all, and this, take that back, go backwards on this, your question, is I think there absolutely would be challenges on a constitutional basis, not just under the U.S. Constitution, but also under the state constitution. The Texas Constitution, Article 1, Section 3A, specifically prohibits discrimination based on national origin. And so does the United States Constitution. And we've dealt with these kind of laws before. I mean, in Texas and California and many other Western states passed alien land laws that prohibited Chinese and Japanese people from purchasing land, exactly as these bills do. And we're hoping to not have to get to a court challenge, either because these bills never pass or because we change them in a way that where it fundamentally does not discriminate against our community anymore. But my concern from the very beginning is sort of what you're talking about, is that I'm afraid that the ramifications of these bills, that the harm has already been done. Meaning that, look, China is, for better or worse, China is Texas's second largest trading partner, right? China is the third largest single purchaser of Texas goods, including mainly oil and gas products, energy products, including heavy machinery, and agricultural goods. Texas grows a lot of soybeans, but Texans don't eat a lot of tofu. Those soybeans are going somewhere else. So, you know, this could end up harming our state directly in that if we say that we're no longer friendly, we're no longer wanting to do business with China and with Chinese companies, I mean, their easy reaction is, well, we're going to stop doing business with you too. But even outside of those economic concerns, from an individual perspective, you know, you said earlier, we invite a lot of Chinese students here. Well, those Chinese students are almost all grad students, and they're almost all here studying STEM fields. And we're doing a lot of fields, getting doctorates and master's degrees in a lot of fields that like most Americans don't want to do, like mathematics, like physics, like chemistry. And the hope is that they come here and study, but after they finish their degree, that they stay in the U.S. and they stay in our state and join the fields such as energy fields, such as NASA, such as the medical center. And the concern is that if you say that you're blanketly saying that these visa holders, these students, these investors cannot purchase a home, cannot purchase a business, and blanketly saying, we don't like you because you're a spy or a potential spy, why would they stay here? Why would they come here after they finish school? Why would they stay in Texas? And we could have potentially a second and third order results, consequences that we could have a massive brain drain in a time when we're already having a hard time fielding positions or staffing positions on, especially on highly skilled sectors.
Gene, let me ask you this, just from a political standpoint, given the overall tenor of U.S. and at this point, Texas discourse on China, and obviously, it's incredibly negative. In fact, a recent public opinion polling was just published that said that we are literally at the all-time low watermark in terms of favorable sentiment toward China in this country. How realistic is it to expect Texas legislators who may in their heart think that this is a horrible idea for Texas to stand up and fight against this bill, again, given the perceptions of political imperatives, optics, and so on?
Well, I think it's really important to note that standing against this bill does not mean you're standing up for China. And I want to be absolutely clear about that. We, as a group, as a community, completely and 100% recognize that there is a real national security interest in dealing with China. But I think the most important thing that, especially like when witnesses came to testify against these bills last week, time and time again, they said, I am Chinese. I do not represent the Chinese government. That's where I come from. I don't represent the government. I have nothing to do with the government. And that's something that we've been pushing again and again. that this is a particular issue that affects especially immigrants, but especially Asian immigrants, that we're held to account for the actions of the governments from our home countries. And time and time again, we say, like, look, that is kind of a racial stereotype. Chinese people do not represent the Chinese government, no more than if you were traveling abroad, that Americans should be held accountable for foreign policies made by the American government. Whether you like the president or not, we shouldn't be held accountable for what our president does as foreign policy.
Yeah, I think that's clearly true. And yet, for whatever reason, that seems to have been lost on the authors of the legislation. But hopefully in the legislative process, the language will be adjusted or the bill will be quashed. And on a related note, Gene, before we turn to some AAPI issues, which I know you've been very active in, are you aware of any other proposed efforts in the Texas legislature to, quote, counter China apart from this sort of issue set? Are there other ways that the Texas legislators are seeking to advance legislation that targets either China or the, quote, Chinese Communist Party?
If there are, I haven't really seen it. That's not to say that it doesn't exist, but like right now, because the state legislature will file somewhere around 6,000 pieces of legislation, many of which never sees the light of day, it's hard to gauge where we're at, because such as, you know, Senate Bill 711, we didn't even pay attention to it because it uses completely different language that sort of went under the radar, but did the same thing. We didn't really find out about it until it came up for a hearing. So it's hard to say exactly if they are. The one saving grace is, fortunately, that, you know, states don't get to dictate foreign policy. States don't get to dictate diplomatic relationships and so on and so forth. So I'm sure there are people out there who have filed bills dealing with China, but I don't think they're necessarily serious people, because, you know, anyone who is worth their salt in the legislature would know that the state cannot affect national policy in that respect.
Let me transition to a different set of issues, although there is, I think, a nexus with the proposed land ban bill, and that's the AAPI issues here in the state of Texas. What's your overall sense, Gene, for AAPI sentiment among your constituents and across the state in light of the terrible spike in anti-AAPI violence that we have seen over the last several years? Is there a sense of concern or anxiety within the AAPI community about the trend lines in this country? And just to bring this back to what we were just talking about, how concerned are AAPI Texans about the prospect of the bill that we were discussing, or the bills, exacerbating already worrisome anti-Asian hate activities?
You know, the Asian American community in Texas is incredibly diverse. We just run the whole gamut of the Eastern sphere of the planet. We have people from every country, every sub-religious, sub-ethnic group somewhere in the state, or somewhere even in my district. And there is one thing that unites all of them, and that is a serious concern about the rise of anti-Asian hate. Because while a lot of the anti-Asian hate was directed specifically at the Chinese community, you know, frankly speaking, nobody in this country, other than people who are in the community, knows the difference between Chinese versus Japanese versus Korean versus Vietnamese versus anybody else. And so when there is anti-Chinese hatred, the entire community feels it. It's the entire community who will be attacked. And in fact, that did happen right here in Texas, in Odessa, where a man walked into a Sam's Club with a knife and found a Burmese family and started stabbing them, started attacking the father, the son, and the rest of the family, and almost killed them. And all the while shouting anti-Chinese things that he's heard on Fox News. And, you know, as an Asian American, as a Chinese American, I was, you know, would easily say that Burmese people look nothing like Chinese, and nobody in the Asian community would make that mistake. But that didn't matter to this person. He thought they were Chinese. So this is of great concern, because a legislation like this is essentially a green light to crazy people. It is saying to people who already have a grudge, who already have hate in their on their minds, that, hey, you know those people that you were worried about? You're right. We're worried about them too. We think they're spies and traitors, and they're a danger to our country. And this will become a little nudge, a little green light to say, go for it. If you want to attack them, go for it. We think they're a danger to us too. And this is one of the big issues that our community has with legislation like this that directly points a spotlight onto the Asian American community and basically paints a target on our backs. We are definitely concerned about the last 3 years of unprecedented rise in anti-Asian hatred, Texas being one of the leading states in the rise. And that legislation like this just will increase the amount of terror, the amount of physical violence, the amount of discrimination that our community as a whole feels.
You know, Gene, it's an issue that's very personal to many of us who have friends and family members who are Asian American. But I will say the Bush China Foundation was among the earliest voices in terms of U.S.-China focused nonprofits in this country to come out and frontally condemn the deplorable, shameful, disgusting, and despicable language that President Trump and many others in Washington used around the issue of COVID-19. And we saw immediately, as you and so many others did, what the impact of that was going to be in terms of, just as you rightly noted, sending a kind of green light signal to the haters in this country. And lo and behold, over the last 3 years, we've seen that play out tragically. And it's horrific. And the language that was used around COVID-19 was far beneath the dignity of any office holder in this country at any level. And we'll continue condemning that type of language as we hear it. But again, we appreciate your efforts on that front as well. Let me ask you, in 2020, the Asian American Health Coalition and Houston Health Department released a report that stated, and I'm quoting, "Asian Americans in Greater Houston face language, cultural, and economic barriers that can limit the AAPI community from attaining its hopes and aspirations." Is that conclusion consistent with what you see and hear? And if so, what can be done to improve the situation for AAPI residents of Houston and the state more generally?
No, absolutely. And this is something that our community has struggled with for as long as there's been such a thing as being an Asian American. And part of the struggle is against this concept that has related to these bills. This idea of perpetual alienness, that Asian Americans will never truly be considered Americans, that will never truly be considered a part of the society, that we're always seemingly too foreign, too alien. And we have Asian American families who have been in this country for five generations since the Gold Rush days, since the railroad days. And even still, if you ask the newest generation, do you feel accepted? Do you feel included? And, you know, you'll get very sort of like mixed responses. But, you know, one of the questions that that I personally hate and that Asian Americans get all the time is people ask you, you know, hey, where are you from? And you, no matter what your response is, and if you say like, I'm from Houston or I'm from Texas, they'll go, oh, no, where are you really from? Every single Asian American has been asked this question. And what it really is saying is, while this person might be asking you, what is your ethnic background? But what they're actually saying is, I don't really believe that you're an American. I don't really believe that you're from here and that you're one of us. Tell me where you're really from. Tell me where your real loyalties are. And frankly, that's extremely offensive and it's shameful. And, you know, it holds Asian Americans back, not just in a sense of personal pride, but in terms of business and in terms of promotion. We have lots of situations where, like such as in the medical field, where we see Asian Americans making up like almost a third of the medical staff. But when it comes to the executive level, when it comes to managers, when it comes to executives, Asians make up a tiny, tiny portion. Like, I think for executives nationwide, it's less than 2% of the executives in the medical field are Asian American, while the actual working members are nearly 30%. So that kind of concept of you will never truly be one of us is harmful, not just on a personal level, but it's harmful in a societal level. And, you know, we also have these ideas in our community that, you know, we don't want to interfere because we don't really belong here. And people have told us we don't belong here. So people tend to not go access services. People tend to not vote. People tend to not complain to their government officials when they have problems and ask for help because there's a sense of we don't really belong here. And that's reinforced by other people.
Let me just ask one more question before we wrap up. And again, really appreciate your perspective on all these issues. I'd love to get your thoughts on what you think the vision should be for the Texas-China relationship. It is a relationship between two global top 10 economies. Texas by itself, as you know well, would be a top 10 economy in the world if it were a nation. And if the governor or the state leadership at the executive level asked you for your thoughts on where to go with the Texas-China relationship, what advice and suggestions would you offer? Are there areas of unrealized potential or synergy that we should be trying to give expression to in this really important relationship between two major economic entities, China and Texas?
No, absolutely. And I mean, even before we talk about China and Texas, I think it's important to note that the Asian American community is the fastest growing community in the entire United States and including in Texas. The Asian community is growing at a rate almost twice as fast as the Hispanic community, which is the next fastest growing group. Now, that's not to say our group is huge, but it's going to get bigger a lot faster. And one of the things that I think has made Texas strong, has definitely made Houston strong, is this sense of international cooperation. I think if there's anybody out there who bemoans the idea that we're doing business with other countries, that bemoans the fact that other countries own property, that there are companies in those other countries own property in the state of Texas or in their city, you're about 30 years too late. I mean, that boat has sailed a long, long time ago because all commerce, all economic factors are global. There is almost nothing that we have in our lives that does not have some component of international cooperation. And whether that's European countries or Asian countries or wherever it is, this is an unavoidable fact that our economy is now global. Either you learn to deal with it and you learn to work within the system, or you're going to have to go back 50 years to find something else that's different. The future is the progress. And we want to reiterate the idea that Chinese companies, unless they've been shown to have direct government ties, and those are usually pretty public, you know, do not represent the Chinese government. Unless they're actually companies owned by the Chinese government, they're not government controlled. And we should be fostering cooperation. We should be building these bridges because I'm of a mindset that if you want to change other people, keeping them away, keeping them at arm's length, pushing them away, saying that I don't like you, I'm your enemy, is not a good way to get them to change. If we want China to be more democratic, if we want China to be less authoritarian, we want their people to have more freedoms, we should be working with them. We should be encouraging more trade. We should be encouraging more exchange. The more that Chinese people in China can see the success of Chinese people here in America, can see how well our people live, can see how successful we are, and can see the freedoms that we have, then they're more likely to demand it from their own countries. That's something important to remember, because when we have these very confrontational, very antagonistic types of policies, I don't think that does anything to encourage China to do better. Right. And instead, they'll go look at what they're doing to the people, Chinese Americans in the country. Why would we support that? That they're discriminating against you and they're singling you out you know, you don't want to go over there.
No question. I think that's very well said. And, you know, I might add that in the year 2022, U.S.-China bilateral two-way trade reached $691 billion, a record. And I think what it shows, among other things, is that the American people, through their economic behavior and choices, actually don't want decoupling. Notwithstanding federal and other efforts to move in that direction, the fact is, as you rightly point out, our economies are inextricably intertwined, and trade is good, and the more trade, the better, and the more prosperity generated for the people of Texas, which is a major trading state. And so I think all your points are extremely well taken. Representative Wu, thank you so much for your time and insights today. We really appreciate all that you've shared and also your service to the great state of Texas. And thank you once again for taking the time to be with us.
Thank you so much for your attention.
Remember to look for the Bush China Foundation podcast on our website, SoundCloud, Apple Podcasts, and Spotify, where you can follow our conversations. As always, thank you so much for listening.